Appreciate y'all tuning in to another episode of Bliss's Ignorant Podcast. This is Jay Bliss. Man, I got another one of my comedian compadres out of the state of Texas on the line today, man. My man Dez White. Dez, what's good, baby?
What up with it, Jay?
I can't call it. I see you got your little funky cowboy hat on. I ain't even peep that till you lean forward. I don't want to see him argue with you about no album, man, about my Eagles, man, but
because you know we can. Cowboy and Eagles fans can go at it.
I did not peep that. I was like, dude, I know this dude ain't got no doubt. I should have worn my Eagle joint, man, for real, man. What's good with you, man? How you been, man?
Hey, man, I can't complain about a thing, brother. You know, just grinding like bad breaks.
Yeah, that's so it. We about what? 3 years out, 3.5 years out of the pandemic. How was the transition back in? Like, you know, everybody kind of went through their little bumps and bruises when they first got back into it. You know what I mean? Texas is a little bit different because y'all was kind of open. Y'all ain't really shut down like everybody else.
I think the whole pandemic, Texas might have shut down for a day.
Yeah, right.
And after that, they was like, hey, man, let's get back to it. You're going to live. You're going to die. You're going to die. Texas don't give. You know, they don't care at all, bro.
Right. We had the opportunity to meet by happenstance, just by being around the same place at the same time. We were in Greenville, South Carolina with Dominique.
Yeah.
And I had just happened to be coming through, did a guest spot, got to chop it up with you. You was featuring for that night. And then we did like a podcast together later on that evening. One of the funniest stories I ever heard in my entire comedy life was your first time on stage. That was that right there to me. I haven't heard one yet that tops what you did. So without further ado, I please break that story down to me again on your first experience with trying comedy.
It was Steve Harvey had a comedy club.
Right.
And he would do the Apollo night thing. And I got on thinking I'm gonna do Apollo, you know. And the thing was, if you won, you got to go do the actual Apollo show.
Right.
So yeah, man, I got on there, and before I could finish a joke, they started booing me. And in hindsight now, I realize what I did wrong, because I thought I was supposed to come out. First, I thought comedians just made shit up.
Right.
I honestly thought that comedians just made shit up. I didn't know they actually had a routine.
Right.
So that was mistake number one. Mistake number two was, or should I say mistake number 1A, was I got on and I tried to talk about the host. Which was Steve Harvey. And I learned then, when you come to a spot and someone's hosting and it's their room, the worst thing you can do is try to rag on the host of the room. Yeah, man.
They gonna get the mic back. Like, like.
Hey, man. And they booed the hell out of me for like the first 6 to 9 months.
But you kept coming back though.
Hey, man, it was to the point they would boo me because they knew I was a dude they booed last week. Hey, man, it's a dude from last week. Boo! Yeah, bro.
That is hilarious. Dude, the fact that so to me, you know, it kind of like reminds you of wrestling when you got the heels. Like, you know, the dudes that just, that, like, right. You know, they go in to get booed. But the dedication that you have to be able to take that abuse. They'll be able to, like, look, man, I'm going to keep trying this. So it had to be something within yourself that made you feel comfortable to say, I want to be up here, regardless of the reaction or what the crowd was giving you.
And it's funny, man, because as soon as I got booed and realized that it was a club full of people booing me,
yeah,
it was something in me that was like, yeah, this is it. This is what you were supposed to be doing. Because I was in that stage where I was trying, like, okay, man, where is my place in life? You know what I'm saying? I was in college. You know, I'm like, okay, this in college was, I liked it, but I was like, And I was like, what is it? And when I tried comedy and they booed me that night in Oak Cliff.
Yeah.
It was it, bro. I promise you, it was a feeling that came over me that was like, hey man, this what you want right here. This is what you're looking for.
Right.
And I just been grinding at it ever since.
That's so dope, bro. Like, because most people booing, does something to them to a point where they doubt themselves, they get rattled, their thoughts
Right.
don't work, you know what I'm saying? And for you to say, I'm looking past that, like I see past this little club here at Oak Cliff, like I see me somewhere else, like doing more, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And like to take that, like see, for me, I never had the stage fright. So I felt like that's when I knew it was I could do this because I felt comfortable being on the stage. The
Right.
booing, right? The booing don't ride on me either because I'm like, listen, I got something for you. I don't care if I'm up here for 10 minutes and you only laugh once. I'm gonna get you that one. You know what I'm saying? But it's
Right.
it's just something to kind of work on, something to understand. And the idea that many of the outside people have, the pedestrians, if you will, that they think comedians are just making stuff up.
Right.
Like
I honestly do. I
that's the
honestly.
comfortability that us veterans now have to be able to say, I can make this look like I ain't even trying. You know what I
Right.
mean? And that's the gift. That's the gift part about what we do. 10,000 hours, right? 10,000 hours is what
Right.
they say to make yourself a professional,
Professional.
a craft, a expert on what you're doing. And some of it don't take 10,000. Some of us have the innate ability. Some of us are naturally funny, but can't tell a joke, right?
Right.
Then there's
Right.
people that can craft a joke, but can't deliver it,
Yep.
right? So when you get all that together, and then the psychology of how do you get a stranger to get on your side, even though they don't even rock with what you're talking about?
Right. And it's wild, man, to what you were saying. Like, you know how you meet a comic and you be around a comic and then you meet one of their family members and you be like, yo. This nigga is way funnier than you, bro. But you know, it's those different elements, whether it be the stage, whether it be crafting a joke that they just can't do.
It's crazy because you ever go to a bringer show or you go somewhere where somebody brought the audience, like you go to a comedy competition and people that brought people, and the people that they brought start they vote for you first and put their friends second. You know, like I'm about my bad, man. Like
Right.
that man, you're supposed to vote for me. Like, hey man, that dude was funnier than you, man. That dude killed that dude. You know what I mean? It's so funny because I never. Like I say, I travel all over the place. I meet comedians. And if I meet a comedian that's been doing it longer than, let's just say, 7 years,
Right.
I know they got something. There's no way you stay that long not being good, right? Unless you a bullshit person that say 7 years, meaning the last time you got on stage, first time you got on stage was 7 years ago, but you're not consistently doing it. Like you're not consistently on stage. So, I always look to hear somebody's set, their delivery, their premises, how they go in and out of time, subject matter. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I always can tell a new comedian by how many questions they ask. I'm like, why do you keep asking questions? You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
why are you why are you looking for validation from this crowd that don't know you? You know what I'm saying? Like, fuck them. Talk about what you want to talk about. You know what I'm saying? And people Some people just still lost in that whole situation.
Yeah, and it's a spot to where, like, as a at, well, I don't even call them comics at that point, but when you're trying to get there, some people get lost in that part.
Yeah,
And
it's
they
it.
think that's what they supposed to get up. Hey, all right, how y'all, what y'all doing? How y'all been? You know, where the ladies at? Woo. It's like, is this a Q&A or are you doing stand up, bro?
It's an unnecessary filler that I try to break people out of because I'll say, look how much time you wasted. That 30 seconds could have been a setup. That 30 seconds could have been a callback. That 30 seconds could have been something that drove you further into the joke that you wrote or prepared. You could have been silent for that 30 seconds.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, you know what I'm saying? It just
And the
don't.
wild part about it, you could have been silent in that 30 seconds and still been funny.
That part right there, bro. Like, it's crazy the things that we were timid about in the beginning that we utilize as strengths later in the career. Like when I see a Ali Sadiq and a Big J Okerson sit down for the whole time, and I'm like, man, I would not fucking sit down to save my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, I gotta be up because I feel like me being upright gives me the confidence to project what I need to say. When I see somebody sitting down, it reminds me of somebody that you're that comfortable with. It's like the dude that stands on the back of the wall with their leg up while they doing their jokes. You that comfortable in your time and your space that you like, I'm gonna just do these jokes. And I'll be like, damn, bro, like that's crazy to me. You know what I mean?
And it's funny because people always tell me, they was like, man, how do you cope with the silence that you have on stage sometimes? And
Yeah.
for me, it's like it's a comfortability. I'm comfortable it sitting there standing on stage, and the
Yeah.
room is silent, or I'm silent for a point. But at the same time, nobody's talking, so they're listening.
Yep,
You
that
know,
part. Yeah.
so it's like, okay, they waiting for the next. They listening, and whenever
They're
you got an
attentive.
audience that's listening.
Yeah. Like if you come out in the beginning on your set with a quick fire joke, right? A 8 to 10 minute last per minute joke, and you bang 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 bang, and they get done laughing, and you just go take a sip, and you quiet for 20 seconds. They still digesting everything, man. It's like you ain't got to cut. And another thing, you ain't even got to go there. You can say, "What was I talking about?" And somebody gonna be like, you was just, and you're like, all right, cool. All right, we good. Y'all paying attention. You know what I mean? It's like them little things that make me laugh, them little intricacies of the joke telling persona. Like somebody that could tell a joke without saying words. That to me is monstrous. I've tried my best to come up with a material or a bit that allows me to portray a story or a joke using little words. It's innate. Like I seen Lunell do it one time where she was talking about her daughter in school and how she can make more money, and she just stepped back, looked at the mic stand, and went up and down the mic stand like this and looked at the audience, and I was like, oh shit. And she suggested her daughter strip, but I was like, yo, that shit was mind-blowing, because the whole audience got it immediately, and she never said a word. And I'm like, yo, that's crazy. And somebody was like, yo, how did she write? I said, dude, she didn't. It's crazy she didn't write it. The step back alone, the look up and down at the microphone and like this was the joke. And I was like, that's crazy. Because somebody will be like, what if somebody didn't get it? Like, if they didn't get it, they was not paying attention to what she was talking about. You know what I
And
mean?
right. And another thing is that, I mean, there's so many different styles of comedy, of stand-up. I didn't realize that until later on in the game. And I was like, okay, he's funny, but he's totally different from this guy. He not,
Right.
and it's funny seeing comics go through, especially young comics, go through that, because they really trying to figure out like their place. They
Where my
trying to figure out
space
their
is, right.
style or what their swag is gonna be.
Right. Because I
And a lot of
mean,
times you go through different ones to find yours,
like, what do you feel more comfortable like doing? Would you consider yourself the observational comedian? Would you consider yourself a misdirection comedian, a storyteller, a one-liner? Like, what do you kind of like patting yourself after? What do you feel more comfortable? What space do you feel most comfortable in?
Me, I think I'm more an observational
Yeah.
kind of guy than a storyteller.
Yeah.
Because I tried the storytelling type, but for me and trying the storytelling type, I would get bored with the story.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, so I got a couple of bits that I do tell a story, but I don't enjoy it as much as the crafty joke that I told. Like, I don't enjoy it as much as the misdirection or the callback that I got coming. You know what I
Right.
mean? So I got a story I call, I titled one of my albums off of one of my stories, Fries at the Bottom of the Bag, right? But it there's a lot of different levels to it, but it is a story that made the joke work. Cause when I first wrote the joke, it wasn't funny. Then when I made it into a story, it's fucking hilarious. And then they get the message at the end of it, and I'm like, this shit is stupid. And then I got a story that I tell about my cousin being in the military, then going to the Secret Service. And that, like, it's a long story, but I hate the reason why I'm anxious about telling this, because sometimes the ending punch way better than it do. Like, sometimes it don't punch that hard. And I'd be like, damn, was y'all not paying attention? You know what
Yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
I tell you about them stories. The worst part about a storytelling comedian is if that first one don't hit. And then you going into your next story. I mean, like this is a long time. That's a long.
And what killed me about that is you because you in your head you like, do I even go to this next? Do I mean, should I? Because that one, that last one didn't hit. Should I try to fix the story somewhere or just go right into the next story?
You need to do some crowd work or something. Like,
Something.
you got to get some little laughter out of something to make it go another way, because that's a wild situation. I was talking to a comedian on the last podcast, and I was talking about the disrespect that you can have with an audience by not acknowledging something immediately when it happens during your show. Like, if you're doing your joke, like a new comic will be so upset they just doing their set. They ain't worried about nothing else. Like, a lady could fall in the front row and you like, dude, you just gonna continue on. Like, you ain't gonna acknowledge that. Like, yo, they
Right.
be afraid they go off their path. Like, I'm gonna lose my spot. And I'm like, nah, man, you have to acknowledge everything that happens. Not a heckler, not necessarily a heckler, because you could talk over them. But I was doing this show this other weekend with Mark Norman, and I'm doing my set, and I'm 15 minutes in. And these four people come right up front, right in the middle. Like, they come late, they come in right in the middle. And I'm at the most ignorant part of my show. I'm doing a joke that I call a room turner, meaning that I'm gonna tell this joke to remind everybody that they at a comedy show. This joke is not even a joke. It's the most fucked up shit you could say on stage at a time that it was mad quiet. So I set it up where I go, I do one joke, and I tell everybody I was testing the room to see how far I could go with them.
Right.
Then I say, I'll keep it here unless y'all want me to go worse. And somebody always says, go worse. And I go, all right, the next thing I say, this microphone is that person's fault. And I'll say their name, and everybody repeats their name, and I take a sip. And as I'm taking my sip, here come these four people. Then I say it, and the crowd go fucking crazy, right? And then them four people like, what the fuck did we just walk into, right? And then they sit down, and I go, hey, appreciate the black people coming in late. And they the whole crowd go crazy. These people wasn't black, they was all white. I was like, what y'all late for? You know what I'm saying? And now the crowd like, yo, this is crazy, because they don't know what they're walking into. They have no idea who I am. They ain't even here to see me, but now they know I shouldn't have walked in late. What the hell did he just say again?
Right.
And why are you messing with me? And now the whole crowd is just into this frenzy. And even Mark afterwards was like, yo, what did you? I was like, I know. I said, it's crazy. Like I say, but then it reminds everybody, hey, you had a comedy show. Anything
Right.
can happen. Let's not think that what I'm talking about is that serious, is not that intentional, and stop thinking that you can put your platform on the what I'm talking about. Yeah, you
Because
want to talk
yeah,
about politics? I'm gonna talk about politics, but I got a joke coming. You serious about this shit? I'm not. Like,
and an audience, you can't, an audience will do that if you let them. If you let them, an audience will do that.
They'll make it serious about it, and all this other stuff. And I was at a show one time. This was after the pandemic, right after the pandemic. And the lady, I was back at that club. I was back at the club in Greenville at the time. I was headlining that night, and I said something about police or something. She yelled out, "All lives matter." I'm like, "You want to have that conversation with me right now?" Everybody started busting out laughing. I said, "Right now, you want to have that conversation with me?" I said, "Really?" And then everybody was like, "Oh shit!" And somebody was like, "No, don't take it so serious." Like, I'm not taking it serious. I said, "She did. Y'all know what she just tried to trigger me right now." And everybody was going off. And she got loud. Her husband, my husband's a cop. And I'm like, well, shouldn't he be at work? And everybody was like laughing and shit. And dude was right there. I didn't even notice he was there. But then dude stood up. I was like, you can't arrest me, man. I said, you can't. I ain't telling the joke ain't against the law. Get the fuck out of here. Everybody was like laughing at it.
So the husband got mad too.
He got mad because she got mad. She caused the shit. So then I was
Right.
like, I'll tell you how we can fix this whole situation. And somebody was like, yeah. And I said, see, this ain't gonna change because she ain't gonna be quiet. I was like, and he gotta back his wife up. I was like, so I'm gonna do both of y'all a favor. Both of y'all a favor. I said, I'm the headliner of the meeting. Ain't no comedian come up after me. So I'm gonna do this because I've never been able to do this before. I said, y'all get the fuck out. And everybody crazy that did. I was like, I'm paying a bill. Y'all get the fuck out. And the people came and escorted them out or whatever. And then they was like, God, they was like, damn, they was like, you ain't never thought. I was like, never thought that they'll throw nobody out. I was like, but fuck that shit. I was like,
Damn it. You beat me to that one. I haven't had no one thrown out yet. I haven't put nobody out yet.
yeah. So in like most clubs, what is it? What's the keyword they use? Can I get some water?
Yep.
They say you say. Well, I'm telling. I'm letting the audience know when you hear a comedian say, "Can I get some water?" That means these motherfuckers need to go. Like,
This group right here, this whole table, put them the fuck out. Get them the water outside.
but then you gotta act like you ain't know. Like, oh, they throwing them out. Oh, that's crazy. You know
For
what I'm
real, man.
saying? People don't know. I try to explain to the audience all the time, or friends of mine who don't understand what comedy is and how it works. And they'd be like, well, how do you know you're supposed to get off stage? Like, well, they light you in the back. And then they'll be like, what do you mean? I was like, there's a little flash. The flash lights you till you got like 5 or 2 minutes left or whatever. And then they said, do you get lit? I go, nah. I said, I learned very early on. I just take my timer on stage with me. I put a clock on my phone. I was like, so I never have them light me because I'm a professional and I'm gonna get off when I'm supposed to.
Right.
And I said, that's one less thing that they got to worry about trying to get me off the stage. And so I tell them about lighting. I tell them about the time that's supposed to happen in the front and in the middle and then at the end. And we're not supposed to curse people out in the middle. We're supposed to let the headliner do it. You know what I'm saying? But then sometimes as a feature, you do got to get the audience right. And
Yeah.
I've had to cuss people out at the feature spot before.
Yeah, 'cause they're gonna test you.
Well, you don't want them to fuck it up for the headliner. You know, they start
True.
getting on a roll. Now they think they part of the show.
Yeah.
And you like, nah, man, like, I need to chill this shit out. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah, for real. And that's why I don't even deal with hecklers like that. When the crowd starts like that, I immediately go straight for the throat.
yeah.
You
Oh,
either
yeah.
gonna you either gonna laugh or bleed to death in here, because we not gonna do this all night.
Absolutely, man.
You're not
Now,
gonna do my set and the person coming behind me. You're not about to do it after them either.
100%. Now, you being in Texas, I mean, that's a country in its own. Like, to me, like y'all be wilding on it. You can literally do comedy and never leave your state. Honestly, like you don't never have to leave your. I mean, if you deal between the cities and then the smaller clubs within those other cities, you know what I mean?
Hey man, early in my career, that's pretty much all I was doing. I wasn't even trying to lead a state so much. And it's funny, and it's funny because even after the pandemic, I found myself getting back into that,
Yeah.
to where, I'm just doing in-state stuff, and I'm like, you know what, man, wait a minute, man. I gotta start, I gotta get back, because it was good and refreshing in a sense, because it reminded me of the back days, those days back then. Like, okay, yeah, man, I remember this, man. I remember going to these little country towns, and having a ball,
Right.
and you get comfortable doing it, because the money is not bad,
Right.
but it's like, okay, I gotta get back out of the state. I can't just, because you get comfortable, especially the
Yeah.
older you get doing comedy. And then, as opposed to dealing with all the bullshit, you'll be comfortable right in your own little zone, your little circle of,
Right.
I mean, I can do this shit and not leave the state and I have to deal with all the bullshit and rigmarole or the other shit and be fine. But
Yeah.
yeah, Texas is definitely one of the places you don't even have to leave.
It's dope though. I mean, I've never had an opportunity to perform yet in Texas.
What?
Not yet. I actually put some stuff out, sent some stuff to some clubs, Arlington, Houston, a lot of places. I was gonna come down there one time and do that room in Houston on that one night that Ali did a night, and then what's his partner's name?
Which one? Marcus?
Not Marcus, Dave.
Dave Lawson.
I was going to try to go down there and do. I think it was doing a Wednesday night. This was before the pandemic. They was doing like a Wednesday night or something. And I was going to come down there and do that, but then a couple of weeks ago, I had put a post up, and I was talking about a comedy club. Got back to me, told me my credentials was good, experience was there, but I didn't have enough social media
I
followers.
saw that. I saw that.
That was a Dallas comedy club.
I can believe that.
And I'm sitting there like, first of all, y'all not an A room. First of all, y'all not an A room.
Let's start there.
So, random timeout. I'm like, so, and believe it or not, there's comedy clubs within North Carolina that I held down for years. I mean, years. When I say held down, there was two clubs in particular that I did opposite years. I did their New Year's Eve, or no, Christmas week show by myself.
And that's an important date in the comedy business.
A host came out and did 7 minutes. I did an hour and a half. Two clubs. Weekend show. I brought in people. I said, yo, if y'all want to do a guest spot, come on up. I got one guest spot for each show. Da 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 da. One show, one dude came, other show dude was like, I can't make it. I was like, cool. Hour and a half. I did it, held it down. You know them motherfuckers won't book me a headline anymore.
At them clubs?
At them clubs. And I'm like, oh, how quick y'all forget who held y'all down before they realize they could book these internet people to
Nah.
do and fill up their room. And these people really ain't doing comedy as much.
Yeah.
But I'm like, so y'all won't book me no more. All
And
because of social media.
it's less work they feel they have to do.
It's less work, but it's a full room. So I
Yeah.
get their part of it, but remember the people that held you down before you realize what you when you're not you're still not an A room. You're still not an
Right.
A room. And I'm like, all right, that's cool. But there's, the comeback for that, right? Because we all know eventually, we'll get our shine and we'll get something will happen, and somebody will go viral, something crazy will happen. That's it. It's
Right.
like the price of the brick is gonna be crazy for you at that point. Like,
And it could be just for you. No,
and I got the
nobody else,
receipt.
just for you.
I got a receipt just for your club. You know what I'm saying? And I'm gonna send an email back. Like, hey, remember this? Remember this? You know what I'm saying? And it's like I got about good eight to 10 clubs. And don't get me wrong, I appreciate you emailing me back, but the words that you had, the words is different. It's
Yeah.
different when you say not at this time versus this is why we can't do it. And I go, word? Okay.
And 'cause that mean they took the time to verify all your credentials.
I send a clip. I send my special. I send the whole special. You got a chance. You can go back, look back and look at it. I send my social media. I send the references and all the clubs that you can call to verify who I am as a comedian. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're gonna let you
See.
know, hey, this dude is mad professional. He's gonna be there on time. He's gonna do the time he's supposed to do. Crowd is gonna love him. He just won't sell out your room. I'm not gonna sell out your room. I'm not gonna sell out your room. The reason why I go sell out your room because you don't know who I am. Now, the weird thing, Des, and you might go through this too. There's one place that I go to that I sell out every time I go, and I don't know no. I know one person that lived there. Do not know why. I don't know why they fans of me. I don't know how it started. It's the St. Louis Funny Bone. Like, I don't know why, bro. I don't know why
He
I
said, I
go
don't
there.
know why.
Every time I go to do this, a line out the door, bro. Every time I walk up and be like, Jay Bliss, I be like, I fucking don't know y'all. I don't know where they like, I don't know if it's an algorithm. I don't know where this shit come from. But dude, it's uncanny. I'm like, I don't know nobody here. And every show is a sellout.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing, because like clubs don't care if you funny anymore.
No, they
You
want to
know what I
sell
mean?
seats.
They just want to be able to put asses in seats. And probably one of the reasons at that at St. Louis Funny Bone is because they know how to promote and know how to promote the comic that they're bringing. They actually know their audience.
That, you know what? That makes way more sense. Because here's the thing. If you're an audience member and you go to a club and you don't know who the comedian is, but you had the time of your life, and then you come back again and you do like, I don't know this person again, I don't have the time of my life. Now you just come into the club.
Yeah.
Because you just know you're gonna have a good time.
Know you're gonna have a good time.
But that's the part that I try to explain to people. Go to shows when you don't know who the comedian is. You'll
Yeah.
be way more entertained than you going because you saw this person on TV.
True that. And it's funny because I think throughout when black comedy started to take that rise to become like a mainstream kind of thing, we sort of groomed the audience into, well, I don't know who that is, I'm not going kind of thing, because it was you had to know, if, even if you didn't. I remember even back in the day when you didn't know comics from Def Jam, but you'd be like, no, it's a dude with the sailor hat. Oh yeah. Oh, I'm going to see him.
Yo, that's funny. That's funny. 'Cause you're right. Because before Def Jam, you just went to the comedy club.
Yeah.
Like, you just went to the comedy club. Like, when I used to go to the comedy club, when I used to go down on South Street in Philly, and we used to just go down there. We used to like, yo, we going to the comedy club tonight. We didn't know who the fuck was headlining. Like, we just went.
Jay, how old were you when you knew what a comedy club was?
2020?
Yeah.
About 20 years old.
I was about 17, and I had a cousin that played for the Dallas Mavericks. He came down for one of the games. He was like, yo, he flew me in for the game and stuff. And he said, man, I'm gonna take you to a comedy club. And I was 17. And I'm like, what the fuck is a comedy club? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I know what a club is. It's gonna be dancing, drinking, girls. Hey, I'm with that. I said, but a comedy club? What the hell is a comedy club? And the first comedy show I ever seen live was Shucky Ducky and Shucky Ducky and Steve. Shucky Ducky. It was Steve Harvey, Shucky Ducky, and Bill Bellamy.
So you basically saw the Def Comedy Jam All Stars at that point, because Bill Bellamy shut that shit down the first time he was on Def Comedy Jam. I ain't never laughed that damn hard before in my life. When he did the whole shit about coming, I was like, yo, what
Yeah.
the fuck is this? Like, yo, I mean, that right there in my mind is what set, like, it changed everything. Because like you
Yeah.
said, you 17, I'm 20. I knew there was comedy clubs, but the first time I experienced one, I was like 20 years old. I was like, I'm going. But you know, I couldn't drink. They had the barman you had to have if you
Right.
weren't old enough to drink or whatever. But it was like, we just had a 2 drink minimum. So I had to drive buy like 2 ginger ales or some shit like that with the girl I was with. But I think I went, I saw Talent and I saw Mike Brooks. Laughed my ass off.
I was just about to say, two funny motherfuckers, and that's a good show to see for a first-time comic.
And what fucked me up the most was meeting them after the show. They standing right there when you walk out. I'm like, yo, that's the dudes. I'm like, oh, what's up? You know, that like, it's a mind fuck. Like, you like, yo, where else do you go when you get to meet these motherfuckers? You know what I mean? It's like that part of it is like the craziest thing. I tell people all the time, if you want to know you funny, stand outside after you get done.
Yeah.
Stand outside. People will come out and tell you what they thought. They're like, man, yeah, that. You was fucking great. Some people gonna be like, "Hey man, keep working, man. Keep
Yeah. Some
it up."
will come tell you that while the headliner standing right there. Oh man, he was funnier than the headliner. I'm like, damn, bro, don't you see this nigga right here, man? Like, and then you're like, okay, are you doing that to fuck with him? Or are you doing that to fuck with me? Which
No.
what?
Yeah, I'll be trying to explain subjective to people. They be like, "I don't even know what the fuck that mean. I just know you was funny as hell." I'm like, "Yeah."
Ah, that's funny.
It's so it's People, it's funny, man. People in nature, man, especially I think us, man, we confrontational, man. We don't give a damn about nobody's feelings. And it's because your parents brought you up that way. My mom was very abrasive, like in her way of teaching me. She didn't care that about my feelings. She like, I give a damn about your feelings.
See, yeah, my mom was the same way. And you're gonna get, and me being the only boy in the house,
Me too.
so she felt like she had to handle me like that anyway, because I was a boy. Like, yo, you ain't gonna be no soft. Get your ass out, get your ass back outside.
So you the only son, or you were the only son in the house at the time?
Only son, period.
Period. Yeah. So
Yeah.
my older brother was gone. He was left. He left when I was about five. So my older brother was 16 and a half years older than me. So by the time I was
Oh,
5 years old, they were my older brother and sister was gone. So it was me, my twin sister, my older sister, and my mom. So I was the only boy in the house.
at the house, yeah.
Yeah, so I got shit all the time. Anytime my brother came home, man, I'd be like, man, please take me with you. Please take me with you. Yeah, so I know exactly what that feeling is like, man. Like I miss being in that adolescent stage of being the only boy in the house. Obviously we had our responsibilities, the trash and the garage and the yard work and all the other
Right.
stuff or whatever. You make sure you do what you gotta do. But when it came to that housework, bro, I'm gonna tell you something. And people won't admit this, and rest in peace to my mother, man. But be honest with you, man. My mom did not hide the fact that she favored me more than my sisters. Like, she didn't hide that shit at all. And I took that shit to the bank. Like, now I got thrashed more than anybody in that house. And I got more trouble than anybody else, but I just think it was because of my adolescence, my hyperness, and things how things was. But man, I remember waking up one morning, Saturday morning. My mom had left already. She was out doing what she needed to do. I come
Right.
downstairs, I'm eating some cereal. My sister was like, yo, mom said you gotta do the kitchen. Julianne gotta do the bathrooms, and I gotta do the living room and the den. And she said, then you gotta go upstairs and clean up your room. And I'm eating my cereal, right? I said, mom said I gotta do the kitchen, the dishes. She was like, yeah. I said, you sure mom said that? She's like, yeah. She said it before she left. She said, it gotta be done before you get back. And I just looked at it. I'm just eating my cereal and shit. I was like, well, I tell you what. I said, the motherfuckers ain't gonna get done by me. Like that. So my sister looking at me like, yo, mom said. And I looked at my twin sister. I'm like, mom, so I said, she was like, I wasn't up. She's like, I don't know what mom said. I said, I don't believe that shit for a fucking minute. She's like, mom said, when she get back, if those dishes ain't done, y'all gonna have hell to pay. So you know how it's gonna go down. I was like, well, we'll find out when she get back. I stood my ground. I ain't doing shit like
I'm
that,
not
right?
doing the
So it's
dishes.
like, I said,
No.
I'm gonna go out here, I'm gonna do my room. And I said, I'm gonna go out here and do the garage. She told me to do last night. I said, but I ain't doing no damn dishes like that, right? My mom pulled up in the drive-through driveway, and my sister was like, I'm gonna just do them cause you ain't gonna do them. I was like, yo, mom, pull up. She like, what's up? I said, hey, did you tell me to do the dishes? And she was like, no, nah, I told Sydney to do that. I said, I goddamn knew I wasn't supposed to do the goddamn dishes. Like, I was
I
like,
knew I wasn't supposed to be busting
I was
suds.
looking at her sideways, like, mom ain't tell me to do no damn dishes. Get the fuck out of here with that shit. I miss that shit though, man. I do, man. Like I say, when you go back and you look at how I was brought up, how things were, I think it helped my comedy part too, like, how I view things and how my
Yeah.
mind worked and how quick things are. You know what I mean? You talk about your family a lot in your routines.
I talk about them a lot. I talk about my sisters a lot, and the different stuff that they taught me, and crazy shit they would have me do, type deal, or the shit that they would get me in, crying behind a dude, and I'm about to fight the dude, then all of a sudden now you back with the dude. I'm like, man, we don't even like this dude. I thought we didn't like this nigga. Man, what are we doing? Like, man, stop it. That's why now they know not to even call me with that shit. They don't call me.
It's crazy, man. That's crazy. Dad, you got kids?
Two.
Two. What's the
Yep.
ages?
29.
You got two?
Yeah, I got 2 29. Actually, they'll be 30 this year.
You got twins too, man?
Kinda.
Hold on. Listen. So wait a minute. There's three people I know. There's three people I know get to answer that question the same exact way. But let me tell you about one of my partners, man. We used to play basketball. We used to play pickup basketball with this dude. This dude talking about he had twins that were nine. We like, oh, they fraternal or they are identical. He was like, oh, fraternal. And I was like, word. He's like, yeah. So then my boy's like, man, why don't you stop bullshitting, man? Tell that motherfucker what you mean. I was like, what? He said, man, this dude had two kids on the same day by two different chicks. I was like, what? I was like, oh, this so. I started laughing because I was like, well, what hospital did you go to? And he was like, I said, because you gonna be shit out of luck, whoever one you didn't go to. He's like, I couldn't be at both. I said, I know. I said, but which one did you go to? He's like, I'm my son, man. I was like, wow.
I tell people, yeah, I got fraternal twins. Then, oh yeah, they say, yeah, my son is 2 weeks older than my daughter.
Yeah. You was just wild out in the streets right there, bro.
It
That's
was
some
like
stress.
2 weeks.
Gotta
I was
be
like,
stressful as hell, Des.
well, it wasn't. Well, it was only stressful because for two reasons. One, my son's mother is just that broad. She just is. She's just that great mother, but she's that broad. You know, and so it wasn't really stressful with them together because I honestly didn't find out I had a daughter until she was like maybe 7, 8 years old.
Wow. That's gotta be a little bit hard, tugging at the strings too. You know what I'm saying? Because them little girls is different. And you kind of felt like you missed out on a big part. You know what I mean? If you find out she's 7 or 8 years old, because them beginning years, man, that's the most important part for me. You know what I mean?
You know what? It matter of fact, it might have been. Now that I think about it, I knew I had heard about her
Heard about it,
at 7 or 8.
yeah.
She was like 11 or 12
When you met
when
her,
I was like, "Yo, we gotta find out what's going on with this right here," you know. And you know, did the test, and that thing came back. It was like, "Oh yeah, it's definitely yours, brother. It's definitely yours."
That's a very instrumental time of their life too. 12 years old, going into teenage and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Things like going around in their head. I got twin girls, so you know that was fraternal and that was not expected for me. Well, you know, I was married at the time. We was trying to get one, and I was like, "Come on, bro! Like
But
y'all,
you a twin, so you know they in your face, in your DNA.
it's crazy because the DNA part of it don't work for the dude. Like, so here's the thing: for a woman to have twins. Like it has to be on her side that she's able to have twins. My ex-wife's mom did have twins, but the little boy didn't make it. So yes, that was passed to her. So it usually skip a generation, right? So she had twins. Me being a twin, a fraternal twin, us having fraternal twins, that shit is like the lottery. That shit is just fucking dumbass luck, right? What's crazy about that is I have a gene that I pass to my daughters. So my twins get it from their mom and their dad. So both of them is they pretty much guaranteed
One
that
of them
one
is
of them gonna
definitely
have
destined to have a twin.
it's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. If it ain't them, it's gonna be their kids. Like it's gonna happen. Like it's I'm like, y'all done got screwed like royally, you know what I'm saying? But you know. God works in mysterious ways. I still say this to this day. I lost my twin sister in 2002. I got married in 2005. We had the twins in 2007. And just fraternal twins. I thought it was going to be a boy girl. Found out it was going to be two
Two
girls.
girls.
I was like, all right. So talked to my wife at the time. Like, whatever happened, the second one born. Got to be named after my twin sister. She's like, I agree. That's fine. That's good. And damn it, if the
That's
second one
dope.
ain't come out, look just like my sister.
Oh, that's dope.
That's crazy, though. And I'm like, Dad, that's crazy. Now my mom get to crying and the family see her like, that's crazy as hell. I'm like, yeah, that's crazy. That's like, yo, that's real. It's like, did you name her after you saw her? I was like, nah, she had the name already before she came out. They're like, yo, that's crazy. And then they're like, yo, that's spooky, right? And I'm looking at this shit like that's crazy. And then when I, you know, look at her and stuff, and I'm, you know, we bump heads all the time because we act too much alike. So I'm like looking at her like, I'm about this close to, like, you know what I'm saying? But it's amazing, man. Like, they're 16 now, but girls is different, man. And
Very different.
I wanted a rockhead, man. I wanted a boy, you know what I mean? But I think I might have gotten more trouble with a boy. With us,
See, and it was funny because, like, me and my son, we used to rock out. Like, he ride with me. Like, when he was a little boy, and his mom would do stuff to try to, well, let me just say this. She was being a baby's mama.
Oh,
Let me say that. So,
yeah.
she being a baby mama. Oh, this is your weekend. Da 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 da. You need to come get him. I'm like, yo, but I got this show. I
Yeah.
got a show that I'm trying. Well, I don't care about the show. It's your. I said, you know what? You show right. I'm gonna come get him. Yeah,
Yeah.
me and him taking a road trip.
Yeah.
Then
Yeah. I
she
mean,
get mad. Yeah, daddy. Me and dad went to the club. I sat in the club, had a drink. Had a drink at a club. Oh, then that would start some shit. I'm like, man, you know he was not drinking no alcohol in no club.
mine are
Like I took
close.
him to I took him to when Earthquake had a club in Atlanta. I took him to
Yeah.
Uptown. He did Uptown with me. The first time I did Uptown, he was there.
That's an experience and a half. That
Yeah.
Atlanta, the Uptown, man. Like, it's crazy. Is there a particular city or particular state you like doing comedy other than Texas? Like, it's one that you just like, yo, I love going there.
Man, believe it or not, Cleveland.
Dog, tell me about it, man. The improv.
Yes.
Yeah, dog. Like, yes, bro.
Man, I
Yes.
love doing the Cleveland Improv, man.
Yes, bro, dude. It gets a bad rep. Like, people don't like doing that club as much. Like, I get called to do that club more than most, because a lot of comedians be like, nah, I don't want, they, but it's one of our rooms. Like, it's
Yeah.
black people be in there, and they in Cleveland, bro. Ain't nothing funny about being in goddamn Cleveland. You know what I'm saying? So, like, you gotta.
I felt some kind of way when I found out they changed it to the Cleveland Funny Bone now.
Well, it's the same ownership, because I was getting booked through the Funny Bone. I was getting booked by Stroop with the Funny Bones and but it's the same conglomerate. It's the same
Okay.
conglomerate. They just changed the name of it, but it's the same conglomerate, because the Kansas City improv is like the same Funny Bone type joint too. So they
Okay.
might change that to the Funny Bone. And the or Orlando one too. Orlando improv is the same thing.
Yeah, I saw
Yeah.
that too, man. Yeah,
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Cleveland, Ohio, really Ohio, period. Because I like the Columbus Funny Bone.
The Akron, so the Columbus part, Columbus, Toledo.
Yeah.
I like the Toledo one too. I like the food at the Toledo one, believe it or not.
Yeah. What is that? The Bluefish or something they got in
Bluefish,
there?
they be laughing like, yo, y'all got gumbo in Ohio? They like, yeah, that shit was good as hell. Yeah, Toledo, Columbus, Cleveland, and there's oh. The Liberty Township, the one in Cincinnati.
I did Cincinnati. I didn't do the
Yeah,
one
remember the
in.
one they had in Kentucky? It was one
Yeah.
in Kentucky that was right across the water,
I
and then
haven't done that one.
they
I never
closed
did
that
that
one,
one.
and then they opened up Liberty Township, and Liberty Township is built just like the Columbus one. That's in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think I did. I think I did the one in Cincinnati.
Yeah, because
I
they
know I
closed the
didn't. Or
one in
did I do
Kentucky.
Liberty?
Yeah, they closed the one in Kentucky. And that was the one they used to have for Cincinnati. It was like right across the border or whatever. But yeah, I do Ohio. I like Ohio. I like the Midwest. Midwest give me a lot of love. People that start comedy in the Midwest for some reason tend to do real well on the East Coast and the West Coast.
Yeah, they do.
People on the East Coast, like people in New York, they sometimes struggle when they come down south or when they go out west.
It's very few from New York that I've seen not struggle
I think it
when
has a
come
lot to
down
do
south
with
for.
their I think it has a lot to do with just their topics.
Yeah. That and I would say their ability to relate to, when you go, you New York is so on the edge type thing that they don't know how to be, you know, they don't know how to get that comfortable feeling when they're outside of New York
I mean,
type.
it's yeah. I had a conversation with Welly Jackson was on here a couple weeks ago, and he live in New York. He live in New York City, so he can get on stage every single day in the week, every night, 10 to 15 minutes, 7 to 10 minutes sets, and do that 4 or 5 times a night. And I'm like, we don't do that. Like we get 15, 20, you know what I'm saying? Work some stuff out, or we headlining the show, so we working out our new material within our 45 minutes or our 30 minute set, whatever. But you just work it out bit after bit after bit after bit, and then when you finally get a show, you just put it all together, which is crazy to me because I'm like, I would forget half that shit. You
Yeah,
know
for
what I'm
real.
saying? Like,
Yeah, me too.
so it's the exercise of the mind that I think we're in New York, because when they get down somewhere and I'll be like, all right, now you used to do these 7 to 10 minutes. Now I need you to do 45. And I think that's where the struggle come, because I see them get lost in their head on what they're gonna talk about next.
Yeah, it's funny to me. The last time I was in New York, I'm at the bar of the hotel. I'm sitting there and I'm drinking the drink. And you know, whenever someone brings me something or gives me something, it's just an instant reaction for me to say thank you. You know, and I bought a drink, tipped the dude pretty, you know. What I thought was pretty decent. And we sitting there and I'm talking to different people moving in and out. And I sat at the bar probably for about an hour and a half maybe. So the bartender comes over and he's like, hey man, you know, and he gives me a drink. And I was like, I didn't order this. Who, someone buy this? Or he was like, he said, he's no man, it's on the house. And I was like, oh, thank you. And he goes, he stopped. He go, you not from here, are you? And I was like, nah. I said, what was it, my accent or something? You know, what gave it away? Because the whole time I'm in New York, I'm trying not to dress like I'm not
That
from
you
there.
don't want to stand away, yeah, stand out. Right,
I'm
right, right,
trying to
right.
blend in with make
Right.
sure, you know.
Right.
And he was like, nah. He said, it was, you said thank you. He said, man, you'd be amazed at how many times I've given people drinks here at this bar, just giving them drinks. Said, and they've never said thank you.
Yeah,
People don't
bro.
do that.
Yeah.
You know, I held the door before a lady in New York, and she wouldn't walk. She almost wouldn't walk through it. She just looked at me. I opened the door for her to let her go, and she stopped.
She thought you trying to set her up, try to go behind her. Yeah, come up behind her. Like, dog, man, it's like, man, dog, man. So I'm from the Northeast. I'm from Jersey, like right outside of Philadelphia. And when I moved down south, man, when I went to college, man, that shit was a culture shock and a half, man. Like, I had cousins, you know, from down south, and they used to always flip out, you know what I'm saying? They come up to visit or whatever, and we'd be up in my room playing video games. My mom be yelling upstairs, Jonathan, da-da-da-da. I'd be like, huh? And they'd be like, you say hi to your mama? I go, yeah, I couldn't hear. They'd be like, you don't say yes, man? Like, nah, man, what y'all slaves or something? You know what I'm saying? Like it didn't make sense to me, you know what I'm saying? And she'd be like, did you hear me? And I go, what? And they go, you say what to your mama? You know, and it would be embarrassing. And I go, dog, I'm not saying like what in that way. I'll say yes. I'm not gonna say yes, ma'am. I said, but my mom knows my inflection. She knows if I'm being disrespectful or not. You know what I mean? And then so when I got down south and people just speaking, you know, I've got this scowl, I got this Ice Cube scowl on my face the whole time. Like, what the fuck? You don't know me. You know what I mean? I'm stepping, I'm real standoffish. It took me about a good 3 months, man, for me to like even trust people. And
I can believe that.
yeah, it did. And what happened was, when I first got to college, I didn't know nobody. So I'm on campus. I don't know nobody
Oh,
from
yeah.
nobody. I knew nobody on campus. So the cats that I gravitated towards was cats from the
Cash from the
Northeast,
East,
the cats rocking their Tims, and you know we talk about the same shit. About 2 weeks in, I start realizing, I can't hang with these niggas, man. Like, dude, like they on some dumb shit. They was on some dumb shit, and I'm like, I'm about to get kicked out fucking with them. So I was like, all right, so you know, cats from the South, was around me or whatever, hanging in my
Right.
room, cats from South Carolina. So for some reason, a whole bunch of people from South Carolina was like hanging with me. There's a couple of dudes from Texas and a couple of dudes from Florida. And I'm like, all right, cool. Then I started
Yeah.
talking to them, like, oh, these dudes just talk slow. I said, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they good, you know what I mean? And I just started learning. They was trying to learn my lingo. I was trying to teach them my lingo. But then I started understanding that whole Southern hospitality, and it changed my whole mindset. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it
Yeah.
would definitely do that because it is different like that, for real, for real.
Yeah. Though it's mind-boggling. You know what I mean? Like how, you know, how people get down like that. And you know, my grandparents were from the South, and you know, they tried to instill those things in me. But the Northeast is it's not for the weak, man. They'll eat your ass up there.
And
And
see, that was one thing that I always like about the East, no, but in the East Coast. Is that really, for the most part, if you could be walking down the street naked with a dead chicken in your hand,
that
and
shit ain't got nothing to do with me.
people will walk by like, that ain't my business, I don't want to know.
That shit ain't got nothing to do with me, bro. Like, that shit ain't got nothing to do with me, bro.
But and to me, that was I thought that was like the coolest thing in a sense, 'cause I'm like, man, motherfuckers don't even be worried about you around here. They on their own thing. They ain't in your business. You just keep it moving.
You about to make me late looking at that dumb shit, man. I'm about to be out. It's crazy. It is funny, man. Like, you learn really early to mind your business. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's just the early lessons that you learn in life. Like, one of the lessons my mom always taught me was, don't ever be around when somebody talk about some he said, she said. Because as soon as somebody say, well, he said, she said, walk away. Just get out of
Yeah.
the vicinity. Don't be nowhere around the story. And she's like, why? I said, because if you around the story, then somebody else is telling the story. And once they say, well, Jay was there, now you involved in the story. And now it's like, well, I heard you said, and I got like, I ain't had nothing. And then all of a
Yeah,
sudden it's a
because it
fight.
will turn into, Jay said, nigga, Jay
Yeah,
ain't saying
Jay was there.
shit.
Jay, then all of a sudden it's my whole story. Like, they came and told me, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So when somebody come and tell me something, like, yo, let me tell you what happened. And I go, I don't think I want to know. You know what I'm saying? Like, you the naked dude with the chicken walking out the street, man. That ain't got nothing to do with me. You know what
Nothing
I'm
to
saying?
do with me.
That got nothing to do with me. But it's a culture thing. It's definitely a culture thing. You know what I mean? And you know, I do appreciate going to an HBCU, because you know, I thought I knew black people. And then when I got to HBCU, I was like, ooh, I gotta learn these motherfuckers right here. Like it was so much knowledge. Them 4 years is probably the best time of my life.
Hey, tell me, Jay, you didn't have a Candace Owens moment, did you?
I see,
When
I'm from a black, listen, my family black as hell. You hear me? Like my grandparents' last name start with the word black. You know what I'm saying? Like that. I ain't name it. When Charlamagne said, God is good, and she's like, amen. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Get
The fuck out of here. You
the
know what
fuck out of
I'm saying? Plus, I'm a preacher's kid. So nah, like none of that stuff is gonna fly past me, you know what I'm saying?
here.
But I'm gonna tell you, it was like when I say I thought I knew black people, meaning I only knew the Northeast part of black people. I learned about Geechee Gullah, I learned about go-go music, I learned about bass music, I learned about who Nemesis was, like I learned
Oh,
all
shit.
these different things, and I'm like, yo, that's crazy. And to meet a black person from Alaska, I'm like, yo, you from Alaska? Yo, like it was like, I people from California, like we was learning all of this in a matter of 4 years. So
Yeah.
when you learn all of this stuff, and you like, yo, I love my people, but then like people be like, yo, but you from Jersey, so you know, and I'm like, I know them, like I grew up with this. This is the part
Yeah.
I know. I want to know about you. You know what I'm saying? I want to know why I met a dude from Texas when I started working at the bank, and this dude, I love this dude, man. This dude, he's a Q, and he from Texas. That dude had never been out of the state of Texas until he got this job, right? So we all in Atlanta doing training for the bank. And this dude, all he talk about is Texas. Like, oh, that's all he talk about is Texas. We go to Benihana. This is the funniest shit ever. We go to Benihana. Now he looking at the menu, right? He looking at the shit like, man, they ain't got no wings. I was like, dog, hell no, you can't get the wings from here, bro. He's like, I said, dude, come on, man. He said, dog, they ain't got nothing on here to eat, man. I said, they got chicken right there. He was like, man, there ain't no fried chicken. I said, dog, like you gotta expand your palate. He's like, man, I'm just go ahead. I'm gonna wait till we get done, man. Drop me, like, you gotta drop me past McDonald's or something. I say, dog, that joke is.
Hey man, my mother was one of those ones that got me interested in the whole palette of different foods. My mother would take us to nice restaurants where you actually had to put real clothes on,
Yeah.
and she would pull, we would get the menu, and my mother would be like, order what you want, but what you're not gonna get is a burger. You order a burger or some chicken, and I'm gonna whoop your ass.
Dog,
And I'd be like, I don't know what this is. Read it. They'll tell you what it is.
dude, that's so, it's so important. 'Cause one of my daughters will order some chicken fingers in a minute. And I keep telling her, you gotta get something different. Like, you gotta change. Like, one of them, and they switched, because one used to always be willing to try new stuff, and the other one was real particular. And now they switched. The other one will try everything. And the other one will be like, ah, I just want some chicken tenders, or I just want this, or I want that, or whatever. And I remember one time they was real young, and I was eating some zucchini. And my daughter was like, what is that? I said, it's zucchini. She's like, what does it taste like? I said, you wanna try some? And she was like, no. And I was like, well, you don't even know if you like it or not. So the other one tried it. And I said, do you like it? She was like, yeah. I was like, all right, cool. And then the other one asked the question. I was like, here, try. She put it in her mouth. I said, what did it taste like? She was like, zucchini. I was like, shut up. Like, I was like, yo, but it's just like you don't know. I remember when I was working at corporate America, we used to go on them company meetings, and they order all them appetizers for the table. They had some escargot on a escargot or whatever the fuck it was, them snails. So, you put a little bit of everything on your plate, and I'm tasting shit. I'm like, this shit nasty as hell. You know what I'm saying? You got to do a little napkin thing, and you put it in the napkin or whatever, throw it to the side. You learn that shit. You know what I mean? But I was just like, boom. But here's the crazy thing that I learned. I learned how to order a steak. So we grew up in the hood. You know what I'm saying? Well done. God damn it. Like, I want my shit well done. Not knowing you cooking all the flavor out the goddamn steak. You know what I mean? But fast forward, I take my mom to a restaurant on her 75th birthday. We go to Ruth Chris. So it's me and my mom. I'm taking her out. We at the restaurant. We order some wine. I got us chilling or whatever. The guy come ask for the steak order. I was like, let me get this. Let me get my medium well. My mom was like, mine, well done. I said, sir, no, she don't. No, she don't. She made a mistake. She didn't want that well done. She want that medium well. My mom's talking about, I'm 75. I know what the hell I want. I said, mom. I said, do me a favor. I said, I'm paying. She's like, right. I said, let me do me a favor. Just take the steak the way I'm asking you to take the steak. I said, don't do no well done, please. You know what I mean? And then so she like, she got the steak, ate the steak, man. She was all happy. She's like, this is delicious. I said, mom. She said, how'd you learn it? I said, embarrassingly, I had to learn by watching. I said, I'm out on corporate events, so I'm the only motherfucker at the table ordering my shit well done. You know what I mean? Like, not knowing everybody else is medium well. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I look ghetto as hell up in here. You know what
Who brought this
I mean? Who is this nigga right here? Like, you know what I mean? And it's
nigga?
crazy because, you gotta be put in certain spaces where you like, just like if you went out, your mom taught you, you go out somewhere and you be like, let me get the quail. Motherfuckers is like, why you ordering quail? Be like, 'cause this shit is delicious. Like, when you get some quail? Man, I had quail when I was 10. You know what I'm saying?
Hey man, it was funny, man. I remember the first time I did my son the same way.
Yeah.
We go out to eat, and I'm like, hey man, don't order no burger, don't
Right.
order no wings. So he's sitting there, he's going through the menu. He's like, okay, I know what I want. And the waitress come, and she goes like, I want the prime rib.
Yeah.
Waitress like, all right, got it. I want the mashed potato or the whole little thing come with it. And when it comes, he looking, And he just started crying.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey man, what is wrong with you? What are you crying for? This
Yeah.
is not what I asked for. This is not what I asked for. I said, yeah, it is. He was like, no, I wanted the prime ribs. I wanted the prime ribs. I
Yeah.
said, that is prime rib. He
Yeah.
was like, no, where the bones at? What the
Right,
rib? I
right,
said,
right, right.
oh, you thought it was ribs.
Yeah, but that's where you learn that young, so
Right.
that when you get older, now you don't look like an idiot at 25. Talk about, man,
Right.
I ordered the ribs. You know what I'm saying? And it's crazy that we think our kids know and they don't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I had a situation. I took my daughters to HBCU basketball game. So they both play basketball. So I took them to the girls' Johnson C. Smith basketball game. So before the game, it was in February. Before the game, they didn't play the national anthem. They played the black national anthem. So we had the joint, they standing up, and I'm sitting there, I'm on that joint like lift every voice. I'm singing this shit. I look at my daughters, I'm like, oh, these motherfuckers know this shit. Like I'm thinking like I don't think they know this shit, right? Now I'm thinking I'm a badass parent, but I'm like, I learned that shit in school. But they go to school in Fort Mill, South Carolina. They don't go to school, you know what I'm
Right.
saying? Man, after the song was over, I was like, y'all know that song? They was like, mm-mm. I was like, fuck. I felt mad as hell.
I have failed as a parent.
Listen, I swear I'm pro black. I'm so black. You know what I'm saying? I was like, damn. I say, like, my kids wilding out. They don't even know this damn shit. So I had to YouTube them the link. I was like, send them the link. I was like, hey, this the shit. Y'all learn this shit. Like this is our
Right.
shit right here. Like,
What HBC you went to?
Johnson C. Smith.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I went to JCSU.
Yeah, I went to Grambling.
You? Oh, that's right. You did.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. We got it. Yeah. We were on the you was on the podcast with me, the HBCU Stories.
Yep, I think
Yes.
so.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So I remember, yeah. Grambling, listen, man. I'm sick and tired of them putting the SWAC and the MEAC at the 16 seed every damn year. Like every year they put us at the 16 seed. And I'm like, look, man, put us at the 8-9, put us at the 12-5. You know what I'm saying?
I be mad that they have to play in every year.
Because it's so disrespectful.
It
But you know
really
what? Let keep on keep it up. Just keep like keep
is.
it up. Because when the NIL money start going to them HBCUs and them cats start making a decision, I just want one year where a Fab Five group decide we going to Grambling, we going here, we going there, and win the championship. It's gonna change the game. It's gonna change the game. And then only like Jackson State, like if five people is like, yo, this is what we're gonna do. We gonna all go here. You know what I'm saying?
And see, and that was one of the things with me and how I felt about the whole Dion when he was there. I get him leaving, and I understand that, and I understand the business part of it, but I wanted him. I think if he would have just stayed a little while longer, he would have still got the same offers that he got to go coach at a D1.
Yeah.
But I think he would have changed the culture for HBCUs in general and how the kids look at it coming out of high school.
I think the timing of it had to do a lot to do with his son's ages, right? If his sons were younger when he did that and they came in as freshmen, he would have had enough time to get the offensive linemen that he needed in order to make them successful. The fact that his son was what, 2 more years of eligibility, and he struggled the way he did with that offensive line and losing two times in them celebration bowls to the MEAC. I was like, dog, you can't beat the MEAC, bro. Like that shit was, MEAC was kicking your ass 2 years in a row, you know what I'm saying? Two different
It
schools.
was getting
And
his
I was like, that's crazy. I think that it would have worked out. But the way I see Shador, that dude is accurate as hell. Like that dude got a good ass arm, man. So I think what's going to happen is, I think when his sons get to the NFL, I think he gonna pull it back. I think he end up might going back to HBCU. I don't know. But somebody, there's so many other people out there that can do the same thing. Like they ain't gonna have the power that Deion has, but I thought Ed Reed was on the right path when he went to Bethune-Cookman.
I did too.
And then like their financial situation was way worse than Jackson State. And then you got schools like St. Aug closing and shit like that. You know, people just doing the money wrong.
Yeah.
But I think the possibility is there, man.
And people always, oh, HBCU is the money, this. And really a lot of institutions had those kind of issues.
Yeah.
Not as much as HBCUs, but at the same time, HBCUs don't get the same funding
Nope.
as those other schools.
Nope. Don't get the funding. They don't have the facilities. Money has to be allocated to shit that the other schools don't have to worry about. It's all crazy, man. I just feel like we have the platform. We just got to get the right people in the right places. But it's gonna happen, man. I just think that it's gonna be a group of kids that's just gonna grow up and they're gonna get tired of the bullshit and they're gonna be like, you know what? We're going to a black school.
Yeah.
They be like, why y'all go to that school? Be like, because we want to show something. We want to do something different. You know what I mean? I don't care
Right.
if it's Norfolk State. I don't care if it's A&T. I don't care what school it is. As long as it's D1 and they go out there and they whip ass. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's it. That
Definitely.
that's all it is. So we about to wrap this up. I know I'm running over on time. But the last part that I like to do for the podcast is I do this like question and answer thing that we used to do like for like James Lipton and the Actors Guild Studio, right? So I'm gonna quick fire you some questions. You give me the response that you can think of when I ask you this question.
Okay.
So first question is, what's your favorite word?
Bitch.
Yeah.
No.
Why you had to say it like short?
listen.
Listen.
Listen is my favorite word.
No doubt, no
Yeah.
doubt. What's your least favorite word?
Don't know that I have a, I don't know if I have a least, what I can say a least favorite word is.
Okay. If I had to introduce you to a group of full of strangers, right? And I had to introduce Des White to this group of people, what's your walk-up music? Like, what do you come out to if I say, all right, I gotta introduce you to this dude, but this song is gonna describe this person?
It would probably be some anything off of Carlos Santana's Supernatural CD.
Oh man,
Any pick a song, any song off of Carlos Santana's Supernatural. They
no
pick any
doubt,
song.
no doubt, no doubt, no doubt. When it's all said and done, you done with the game, you walking off in your career, what's your walk-off music?
The Ghetto Boys Resurrection.
There you go. I knew you was gonna keep it Texas. I knew you was gonna keep it Texas. I knew you was gonna keep it Texas, yo. I knew you was gonna keep it Texas. I got a phrase I use. It's called TTBS. You see it behind me, right? TTBS stands for anything and everything you absolutely no control over. In other words, that's that bullshit. In your mind, what is that's that bullshit? What is it in life that's like that's some bull? That's that bullshit right there.
Racism.
Absolutely, 100%, man. Like
That's
that
that bullshit.
all the time. And the quicker people understand that racism is a direct reflection of your parenting, we'll be done with it. If we
Right.
had great parents, we would never have to worry about racism ever.
Real shit.
Yep,
But
no
and you know
doubt.
that's the first, yeah, you are right, bro.
It's
I
all parents. It's
you
all
are right.
parenting. It's nothing else, man. It's
You are
nothing
right.
else. Duh, your parent has the ability to either like progress it or nip it in the bud.
Yeah,
And it goes on both sides.
that's true.
It
Yeah,
goes on both
you are
sides.
right.
You walk in the house
Yeah,
saying some racist shit, your parents be like, yo, you better cut that shit the fuck out. We don't do that here.
and
Or
there
you could be like,
it
you know what? You're damn right. You can't, I can't stand them. I'll be like, you cultivating the shit. You know what I'm
Yeah,
saying? Your kids learn from their friend groups. They repeat
true
what they hear
that.
from their friend groups. So when they come into their friend groups is saying some shit. You say that dumb shit around your parents. Now your parents is looking at you like, uh-uh. You ain't hanging with them no more, and we don't talk like that.
Yeah.
That's what racism is. It don't go nowhere else. You know
That's
what I'm
real
saying?
shit.
Yep. The opposite side of that, what is the shit to you?
The shit to
Yeah.
friends, man.
Yeah. Real ones.
Yeah, real friends, man, are the shit to me, bro.
Yeah. It's
Real friends.
my grandfather always told me, well, my grandmother always told me you really found something in life if you find one true friend. So sometimes I feel like I know I got one true friend, but you know, a lot of places I got multiple, and I feel like blessed, you know, to know who those people are. They know who they are too. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know what I mean? Regardless, like they gonna answer the phone every time you call. You know what I'm saying?
Every time you call.
Every time you call, they gonna
no
answer
matter
the
how
phone.
drunk you are.
Yeah,
Nothing.
no doubt. if you were not doing comedy, what do you think you would be doing?
Coaching.
What? Which sport?
Football.
A word.
Yeah, I'd be a football and probably a football and track coach.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
That's what's up. My daughter ran track for a little while. She gave it up because they only gonna focus on one sport now. Both of them just gonna focus on basketball.
And
But
I
she
be
was,
seeing the videos, man. They be hooping.
yeah, man. We trying to get them scholarships, man. But the one that was running track, she ran the 400, and we was trying to, you know, when she ran her freshman year, she was at like a 105 or something. I was like, look, mama, don't worry about the time. You got 3 years to get that under a minute, and you can get there. You know what I'm saying? I said, you just gotta understand, you know. And then my frat brother, you know, he was trying to talk to her, tell her exactly how she's supposed to run it. They're like, when you take off, you got to run at 80%. He said, don't be trying to ever run at 100%. He said, start off, you at 80, and you consistent for that 80. Said, and you're going to run it, and you're going to stay consistent all the way until you start feeling it. When you start feeling it, only your arms is going to push you across that finish line. He's like, because your legs going to be gone.
Once that monkey jump on your back, it's a wrap, baby. Yeah,
But it's a stamina run, man. Like people that are conditioned for it, they know they got it. They know they can do it, and they know how to get themselves across that line. Because her timing was great. She until she get to that last quarter when that monkey jumped on her back, that was the only thing stopping her from getting under that minute. I said, that was the only thing killing you right now. That's the only
man.
thing killing you right now. That last quarter.
Yeah, I ran track in high school and college. And the wild part about it is I really didn't run. And people like, oh, well, what'd you run? What'd you run in college? I said, no, I was a field event nigga. I
There you
wasn't.
go. There you go.
It was a high jump, long jump, triple jump. That's it for me, buddy. I'm done. I'm not running around this track.
Not running around that track, man. And I grew up in an area where track was God. So I grew up in Willingboro, New Jersey, man.
Oh,
Like,
yeah.
and that's where Carl Lewis is from.
Yeah.
So we ran track even if you didn't run track. Like, our bus load would be so many people on the buses, bro. Like, it would be like,
See?
yo, they had 7 heats in 100 and like
Yeah.
4 heats would just be our school. Like, it'd be crazy, dog. Like, it'd be
And
crazy, yo.
see, and he went to U of H,
Yeah, I
University of
know.
Houston. So, you know, everybody, you know, and I grew up in Houston, so everybody was like, if you ain't Carl Lewis, you ain't shit.
I mean, I remember all of that, man. Lamont Smith was graduated high school with me. You know, he won the gold medal in the 4x100. So
Yeah.
he was at school there. He went down to down to Houston too. His son run down there now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Hey, man, I appreciate the time, man, and the fact that we was able to chop it up once again on the podcast, man. And shoot, I'll definitely bring you back on, man, in the near future.
Oh man, anytime, man. I'm glad. I was glad to get the invite, bro, to do it.
No
And
doubt.
now that I know that you've never been to Texas on some comedy shit, man, I'm gonna show put it in motion to get you down this way, bro. For real,
Man,
for
look, dude, I'll be on the first thing flying, bro. As soon as you
real.
like, yo, Bliss, I got the joint right here. Now, before I let you go, man, you got to shout out your social media so people know where to follow you at, man.
Oh man, you can find me on Facebook at Comedian Dez White, and it's always Dez with 2 Z's. Instagram is just Dez White. All the other social medias is just Dez White on X now. Guess it ain't Twitter no more. It's Dez White, ITS. It's Dez White. So, you know, it's pretty much Dez White on everything.
No doubt, man. They can just Google that joint and follow everything on that joint right there, man. That's
Not the
what's up.
football player Dez White, the
No.
comedian Dez White with
Matter of
two
fact,
Z's.
I'm gonna tell you what. We got to get an episode where we do a NFC East comedy battle on the podcast. So you're gonna be Dallas. I'm gonna get Eagles. I gotta find me a Commanders fan and a Giants fan, and we just gonna get on here and talk shit. Cause
Oh
I,
man, let's do it.
cause
Let's do it.
I'm mad that you still had this hat on the whole damn time. I might find a way to block that shit out on the commercial, like that
Hey,
shit.
and you know, I was trying to figure out like what could I do? Because I know Jay an Eagle fan. I said,
Hell
we
yeah,
got
you
to
know I'm an
do
Eagles
something.
fan.
Because at first I went with the shirt.
I see it. I see it. That's it, bullshit.
When I put my camera on, I said, oh, he can't see my shirt on here. I'm like, damn, he ain't gonna see my shirt unless I stand up.
Oh man, and it was crazy too. When I was about to put a shirt on, I was like, I should put an Eagle shirt. I was like, nah, I ain't gonna troll him like that. And then I was like, this dude come on with the hat on. Like, damn, bro. Like,
I just knew you was gonna have an eagle. I just knew you was
nah,
gonna have.
man,
I
that's
thought it was gonna
crazy.
be an eagle something in the background or something. I said he gonna have some eagles somewhere.
I had the Eagle stuff on yesterday. That's the crazy part, man. But like, that's crazy. Hey, man, I appreciate you again, man. And we're gonna chop it up real soon, man.
Appreciate it, bro.
All right, peace.
Thank you.